The Carer, written by Deborah Mogarc and read by Patience Tomlinson. The first thing she noticed was her skin. So smooth for somebody of 50. Eerily smooth. But then Mandy had never had children, never been married as far as Phoebe knew, none of the normal wear and tear that makes a woman look used. Mandy was not beautiful, far from it. An overweight woman with Rosemary West specs, wearing a bobble hat and stripy tights. Something vaguely blokey about her. Sometime later, she told Phoebe, "I tried to be a lesbian once, but it just didn't gel. Give me a man any day. I like the smell of their armpits." Phoebe liked her. Truly, she did. She'd come to the rescue after her father had his fall. Two carers had come and gone. Rejoice from Zimbabwe, who talked all through his beloved Radio 4 and fed him some sort of maize meal that clogged up his bowels. Then there was Teresa from County Donegal, who was having a love affair with a baggage handler from Luton Airport and who sat texting him in a fog of cigarette smoke and reading out the replies while the kettle boiled dry and Dad dehydrated. So Mandy came to the rescue. Mandy from Solihull, arriving in her trusty Fiat Panda and bearing homemade shortbread because her speciality, flapjacks, played havoc with an old boy's dentures. Phoebe, normally wary, was encouraged by this early sign of empathy. Mandy hummed show tunes as the kettle boiled. Blood Brothers was her favourite, about two boys separated at birth. She said she'd seen it three times and blubbed like a baby. Phoebe understood why, later. At the time, she was simply grateful that this bulky, chatty woman had entered their lives and restored her sanity. Her father's, too. For within days, Mandy had become essential. It was a wild autumn in the village where her father lived. Branches were torn from trees and his lawn was strewn with twigs. The yapping dog next door was silenced by a seizure and was discovered a week later, stiff under a pile of leaves that had drifted against the wall. He was a Jack Russell and therefore a perpetual irritant. But the loss of his old enemy dimmed the gleam in her father's eye and plunged him further into gloom.
"That time of year thou mayest in me behold," he intoned, "when yellow leaves, or none or few, do hang upon those boughs which shake against the cold, bare ruined choirs, where late the sweet birds sang."
God knew why her parents had retired to the Cotswolds. The village was dead, utterly dead. Ghosts only lingered in the names. The old smithy, the bakehouse, honeystone cottages whose inhabitants had long since gone. It woke up at weekends when the Londoners arrived in their Porsche Cayennes, stuffed with mutinous teenagers and Waitrose bags, and sank back into torpor when they left. What did her father do all day in his diminished life? When her mother was alive, he could bicker with her, as men do who are dependent on their beloveds. Nowadays, his main irritation was to shout at the coach drivers parked outside, who, long after they disgorged their Japanese tourists to wander around the village taking selfies, kept their bloody engines running, filling his living room with exhaust fumes.